okay. I'm here. I'm here. It's been a while since you've had one of those nightmares. Tell me, what was it about?
It's only fragments. Nothing's clear. You've been fighting the Harkonnens for decades.
Luke!
My family's been fighting them for centuries.
Your blood comes from dukes and great houses. Here, we're equal. What we do for the benefit of all.
Hello, folks. Welcome back to a brand new review episode from Words
from
Blurds. I'm JT, and on the other end of the microphone is my boy Adu. How's it hanging, Adu?
It's hanging pretty well. You know, doing pretty good today. Today here to talk about
long and hairy, hard to carry.
Just straight into the gutter.
Just straight into the dick jokes.
I want to talk about cinema, and you just want to bring this show down.
Yes, we are here to talk about the cinematic experience that is the artistry of Denis Villeneuve's new film, Dune Part 2, starring Timothée Chalamet. What a tour de force this film is, dude.
I'm just going to speed past that. Dune Part 2. So, it is the sequel to Dune, of course, Part 1, which came out last...
I think 2021?
That sounds about right, whatever. So 2021.
Or 2022, one of those.
Dune Part 1, it was
nothing but setup.
Yeah, it was nothing but setup. I remember it came out on HBO Max, because was this during the pandemic, right?
It was. It was right at the tails of it. So it came out simultaneously, HBO Max and in the theaters.
Okay, so it was one of those deals.
Yeah.
And the main thing I remember about it is every time I tried to watch it, I kind of fell asleep. And I was trying to stay awake, and I just...
Dialogue in that film, and even in the current film, it definitely felt a little stale, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like these were like super flat, dry conversations.
Yeah.
Amongst people.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like it was a bad movie by any means. It was beautifully shot. I mean, the cinematography was crazy. Sound design was crazy.
Shout out to my boy Greg Fraser, who also did the cinematography for The Batman and the best looking Star Wars film, I feel, in Rogue One.
Oh yeah, shout out to him for sure. Shortly before Dune Part 2 came out, they put Dune Part 1 back in theater. So I was like,
it actually got quite a bit. It boosted up the box office quite a bit for Dune.
Yeah. Dune. I don't know. Dune is, I guess, really kind of a little popular, especially amongst the sci-fi crowd.
And to be honest, man, when I first saw it, I was like, okay, this movie is kind of boring. And even the first one, like the one in the '80s, was okay.
Are you talking about the David Lynch one?
Yeah.
That one has a reputation for being pretty weird. Like even David Lynch is like, yeah, I don't know, it's not one of my favorite things I've ever made. You know.
But I was like, okay, it's a lot of weird religions and cults things are going on. It just didn't seem to me like it would be like super wide appealing to demographics and audiences.
Yeah.
But like when this came out, this joint is now, this is the second Timothée Chalamet film this year to cross $500 million. The first being Wonka.
Really?
Okay. Which is crazy.
That is crazy. I didn't look up the numbers. I'm actually kind of, I knew it was successful, which was a little surprising to me, just not because it's a bad movie, of course. I feel like we both liked it, but it's very almost alienating in how like science fictiony it is. Like Star Wars is sci-fi, but it's very mainstream. You know what I mean? Like you got exciting action scenes and characters making jokes and shit like that. You know what I mean? But with Dune, not so much.
Yeah, this one deals a lot with religion, in my opinion, and like the nuances and the crazy depths people go to for religion. For example, Stilgar. Stilgar was like, what's the words that he used for Timothy?
He used a few words, but one of the main ones was Lasan al-Ghaib.
Yep, those words. he used, like, he's a religious nut, and he and like to the point where they were able to kind of use that as comedic relief.
Real quick, we will be spoiling Dune Part 2 and possibly Dune 1, just so you guys know.
Sorry.
Spoiler alert. Okay, go ahead.
It was just like, okay, like, there's nothing, like, there's nothing appealing here. There's nothing, like, that that excites me about what's going on. It's this beautifully shot, beautifully made film. Like, the set design, the choreography, it's great. Like, the amount of detail put into it. But it just, to me, I don't know, maybe I'm just a layman, but it just, like you said, it felt alienating. Like, it felt too, like, it was too stuck on its sci-fi principles.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was like, wow, okay, this is the movie that they chose to make. This is, I mean, so far it's proven WB right. They doubled down with the second one, even though the first one, again, didn't make money because of the pandemic. So we really didn't know what the expectations were going into the second one. But to have got to $500 million and what, this is its second, third weekend being opened?
Mm-hmm.
It's fucking phenomenal. It's fucking crazy.
It is. It is. Honestly, but here's the thing. Because you brought up Timothée Chalamet. I've been of two minds about Timothée Chalamet because I feel like it's very obvious Hollywood wants him to be the next, like, the guy.
The next Leo.
Yeah, because Hollywood doesn't have too many, like, real, like, movie stars for like they used to back in the day, you know what I mean? For the longest time, I was like, I think I even called him, like, Hollywood's, like, Roman Reigns. If y'all follow wrestling, y'all know what I mean. Where it's like, all right, you're pushing this guy, but I don't know. But here, I thought he was really good. He was better here than he was in Dune Part 1. I feel like in Dune 1, Paul, which by the way, I feel like is a just hilarious name for your chosen one to have. It's like, who's the savior? Bob. You know what I mean? But yeah, in Part 1, he was kind of like, he was real dry, you know what I mean? Like, it's weird because all this stuff happens to you. Your family's, your dad is dead. The life as you know it is over. You're on this foreign planet. You're stranded here, and everyone's trying to kill you. But you're just like, yeah, my name's Paul. What's up? Hey,
that's,
you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it shows. You know, you should be emoting a little more. You know?
Yeah, there should be you know? An experience that you just had. It should show outwardly.
Yeah,
but I mean, unless you're a psychopath and you can internalize all that trauma, sure, go ahead.
Yeah. I think the most emotion you showed might have been when Aquaman died.
Yeah.
But in here, I feel like he was a lot better. He felt like more of like a fleshed out character.
He felt more like a fleshed out character, but towards the end, ugh. I don't know. It was something about the way he was acting at the end. I really started to hate him.
Yeah, and honestly, I think you were supposed to. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a reason for that, because... And again, spoilers, just go deeper into the story. So the whole main point of the movie is Paul's mom basically, and okay, if I feel like with Dune, you got to explain a lot. You got to explain the explanation.
So much.
Okay, so Paul's mom is part of this weird cult called the Bene Gesserit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like a cult of women who like influence like politics across the galaxy and shit, you know what I mean? So they have this prophecy, or they basically created this prophecy.
They're basically a sisterhood of Cersei's from Game of Thrones who want to control everything.
Like a Scientology, but just women. You know what I mean? Basically.
Yeah.
So they make this, like, I think it was, like, fake, basically, a fake prophecy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it wasn't real. All right, so, yeah, they make this fake prophecy for this planet, which is Arrakis. It took me a second before I could remember. Arrakis, which is where Dune takes place. And, you know, they basically make up this prophecy, and Paul is supposed to be the savior of this prophecy. Well, let me correct myself, actually. I got that wrong. His sister was, or there was supposed to be a girl born that would be the savior of this prophecy. But Paul's mom was like, nah, fuck all that. And then she was like, she gave birth to Paul, and Paul's the savior. And so they're on Arrakis, and, you know, Paul has to make, but the thing is, Paul has like psychic powers too.
And that was the big tell for the prophecy, was that whoever this child was going to have these same psychic powers.
Exactly. And the thing is, he has these visions, and these visions tell him that if he takes his place as Lisan al Ghaib, Madib, Mahdi, whatever you want to call him, the savior, if he takes his place in that position, he's basically going to cause a holy war that's going to span the galaxy. So he's like, oh, I don't want to do that. So the whole movie is kind of like you watch him and you watch how he changes during the movie and he has more visions. He's being pushed into this position. And it's actually kind of a little bit of a tragedy because you got this guy who has this thing foisted upon him and he's like, well, I don't want to do that because if I do that, a lot of people are going to get killed. But he just keeps getting pushed and pushed further. The more stuff he's able to do, the more it's like, well, shit, maybe I am Lisan al Ghaib. I'm riding this worm, pause. I'm really good at fighting. I'm having visions, you know what I mean? So it's like, well, damn, maybe I am. And, you know, you get to the end of the movie and it's like, well, I guess I got to start a holy war, you know? So, yeah, it was kind of interesting to see his character's journey throughout that whole movie. All 2 hours and 45 minutes of it.
Jesus Christ. And you felt every minute and second of that 2 hours and 45 minutes, let me tell you.
It's, you know, the length of the movie is, it's a lot. But at the same time, what would you cut out? You know, it's one of those. And the funny thing about it, they didn't even put everything in there. At least Dune related. Dune is like 6 books or something at this point?
I believe so. I mean, I don't think that there's any continuation of that story, I don't think, right?
Yeah, I'm gonna check on that. But yeah, I'm not surprised it's that length. And I know, anybody who's been listening to us, I've been complaining about the length of these movies. They've been long as hell, man. Like, come on. But at the same time, I get it.
There are 23 Dune books.
Oh, okay, so yeah, basically way more than 6. My bad.
Christ.
Oh my God. And I think these two movies, if I'm correct, I think these two movies were basically just the first book, right?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. You know, I feel like Dune would be way better as a TV show. Because even these two movies, they felt like the first season of a Dune show.
I mean, they're doing a Dune TV show.
Oh, okay,
but
they are.
It's with that sisterhood.
It's about the Bene Gesserit.
It's about the Bene Gesserit, yes.
Like a prequel?
I don't know. But I think they're filming it now, actually. Or it's supposed to come out this year, I think.
Oh, okay.
Or early next year.
Interesting.
But
for HBO Max, I
guess. Yeah, okay. For Max.
Okay. So, yeah, how'd you feel about that whole little character arc that Paul went through?
I mean, it was, like you said, it was disheartening to see this young man who literally had lost so much. He lost, you know, his father. He was training. He was in training to be a king for the House Atreides and, you know, to basically be left for dead, so to speak, and then have to kind of rise through the ranks of this people that don't trust you, you know, but there's this subsect of people that do, or that see you as a possible messiah, and you're dealing with the falsities of that, knowing that it was a falsehood but still embracing it anyway. It's like the opposite of a hero's journey.
Yeah, it kind of is, actually.
It's literally like
especially if you know where Paul's story ends up. Yeah, it is kind of the inverse of a hero's journey.
He basically becomes almost like the Antichrist instead of Jesus Christ. But I just thought that slope, and then his, I guess it was a relationship with Zendaya's character,
Chani.
You really got to see that there was a love blossoming there. You really got to see that between them, and you really got to see that he started to really appreciate, like, her people. It was beautiful to see that, and it was beautiful to see the dichotomy of trust and not trusting, and not wanting to be this monster, not wanting to be what people claim you are destined to be, but embracing it anyway and seeing that the signs are there for you to be this and to do this thing. I mean, he does end up becoming somewhat of a badass at the end. I guess I'll say that for him, but I thought
that knife fight was fire.
The knife fight, I mean, listen.
There should be more knife fights in movies.
Okay, so I saw that movie in 4D. So every
I don't know. I still don't know why you did that to yourself.
Listen, I still have a concussion, but every knife fight, like the seats would just blow air right next to your ear every time a knife would slash or hit something. So like I told you, it literally sounded like farts right next to my ear, like. I'm like, is there literally a person behind me doing this, or is there a machine? But yeah, again, I also don't recommend seeing Dune in 4D. Don't do it. Don't do it. Especially when he's riding those fucking worms. No, no, Diddy. But yeah, I thought that I thought that the journey was interesting. Like I said, it definitely was the opposite of a hero's journey, and it definitely makes you wonder what's in Paul's mind moving forward at the end of this movie, because at the end of this movie, he really makes a 180. Like,
I'm so glad he didn't say 360. Too many people make that mistake.
Yeah, no, I don't. He didn't make a full circle, but he definitely went a different way entirely. So, I guess I'm kind of looking forward to see what happens with the story, but
I mean, there pretty much has to be a part three, doesn't there?
I think
it's setting up
for a while. Denis Villeneuve, the director, was saying he wasn't sure if he was going to work on one, but I think like a week ago he was like, "Yeah, I started working on it."
Okay, yeah, because wait, and it'd be water.
I started
like,
working
that's
on
it?
Part three.
Okay,
yeah.
I
was going to say, yeah, you don't cast Florence Pugh and oh God, what is that girl's name? The girl who's playing Furiosa, Anya Taylor-Joy.
Yeah, there you go.
Because she was the voice of the baby.
Yeah.
She's in the mother's stomach.
Yeah.
You don't cast these women just for small bit roles. Like
Paul's mom has a psychic baby, by the way.
Yeah, his mom has a baby inside of her that's growing can understand human language.
Really into murder. And so, you know what's funny? Have you haven't seen the Lynch version, right?
I have
so
not.
So in that one, which is more accurate to the books.
Really?
The baby is actually a toddler with an adult woman's voice.
Oh. I mean,
so I think making the change to make it a baby might have been probably a good move.
It's not even a baby. It's still a
Oh yeah, my bad. Yeah, it's a fetus.
Yeah, it's still fetus. The fact that this woman's letting a fetus talk to her and run her life is crazy. But that's women in the daily whenever they're pregnant. Yeah. That was
another thing that I really liked was the Fremen. You brought up Chani and Zendaya earlier. I like how like they showed, because, you know, the Fremen, I guess you could call them a tribe, they showed like there was a clear difference between Northern Fremen and Southern Fremen.
Yeah.
The Southern Fremen were the ones that were like more into the religion, you know, the older, they were a little older. The young ones were like, man, fuck all that shit. I don't care about no religion, no prophecy. What are you talking about? We out here just trying to survive, bro. You know what I mean? Ain't no water out here, nothing. So I thought, and they even differentiated them with accents, right? Because
Javier.
Yeah, Javier Bardem's character.
Mm-hmm.
Sounded very different from Zendaya's character. You know, they're from different areas.
Yeah, yeah.
So I really like that attention to detail.
Yeah, there's a lot of attention to detail. Like, for example, when Paul was learning to sand walk, and that was consistent throughout the whole. Like, it wasn't like, let me just teach this character how to do something that he's never going to use later.
Mm.
But in fact, you teach him, and it's something that he uses throughout the whole movie. Like, it's very important that you walk a certain way so as not to draw the attention of some big worms. No, Diddy.
or, you know. or Friday.
Yeah.
Attracting big worms from Friday. Yeah, I'm not going to hold you. The first movie, I fell asleep and I woke up and I saw this man sandwalk. I'm like, why is this nigga doing the tussie slide? I was so confused. I was like, what's going on? You know, I went back and watched, but yeah. So definitely, you know, you're introducing something, you maintain it throughout the whole movie. Austin Butler.
What a performance.
I know that this man had it in him. Bruh, hey, Austin Butler, I forgive you for Elvis, bruh. because you were fantastic.
Yes,
in this
please
movie.
Forgive him for his Oscar-nominated performance.
They can be Oscar-nominated all y'all. Look, hey, bro, there are a lot of bad movies that are Oscar-nominated.
Golden Globe nominated.
It was still a bad movie. I don't
BAFTA care. Nominated.
It was still bad.
SAG
after Suicide
nominated.
Squad has an award. Like, what are you talking about here?
For costumes.
It's still an award. It's still a bad movie. That's my whole point. But yeah, man, Austin Butler was really good. He needs to play more villains. This nigga was a psychopath. This nigga was like Randy Orton in the mid-2000s. That's how insane this
Ooh,
man was.
Wow.
Like, he was that's what he was reminding me of, actually.
That is a great comparison. Like, even Dave Bautista wasn't giving that amount of
money. Oh, yeah, I forgot Bautista was in here, too.
Dave Bautista got bitched. He said, kiss my feet or I'll fucking kill you. He fucking kissed his left big toe.
Would you kiss his feet?
Would I have kissed his feet?
If you were Bautista in that position, you know, you've been messing up this whole time, and, you know, he kind of beat your ass a little bit, and, you know, all right, kiss my feet. And you know if you don't, he's going to kill you because he's crazy. So you going to kiss his feet?
Yeah, I like living. Fuck that, I like living. And then the uncle fucking Baron Harkonnen, he fucking was like, yeah, you fail our family again, you make us look bad one more time,
yeah,
I'll kill you my fucking self. His fat ass said that. Can you believe that? His fat ass said, yeah, I'll kill you myself. What are you going to do, sit on him?
Well, he's dangerous. He floats towards you. And
wow. Yeah.
Doesn't he have like some telekinetic something?
I don't think so, no.
I mean, people fear him. He can do something.
I think they feared him before he started floating, when he was actually probably in shape to kill people. Mm-hmm. I think at a certain point he got so good that he just started eating.
I don't know, bro. A big, naked, floating white dude that looked like Steve Wilkos started floating at me. I might be a little intimidated.
That's scary in and of itself. Not Steve Wilkos. He looks like a fucking fat, bald Harvey Weinstein. I mean, he was giving Weinstein energy, for sure.
Yeah, basically. Sci-fi Harvey Weinstein. Honestly, and he's even worse in the Lynch version. He does some stuff that I understand why they didn't put in this version.
And again, I haven't read the books. One thing I am curious about is Leia Saito. You know what I'm talking about?
The hell you just say to me?
Leia Saito?
Who?
Leia Saito? The one who basically took Austin Butler's seed. She's pregnant.
The Bene Gesserit.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
I am curious about what her part in this, like, is moving forward, because obviously, spoiler alert again, Austin Butler dies in this movie. So does her having his seed? Mm. What does that mean?
I actually forgot about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, so, like we said, like the Bene Gesserit, they basically are, they plant seeds,
they
so
have
to speak.
Their hands in every part of politics in this world.
A lot of alien pots. So, and it's curious. I mean, when you really, if you want to be super attention to detail, would Leia Saito's Lady Margot Fenring, would her biology even really mix with? Well, I guess Paul is an example of their biology mixing with.
But Paul's mom and Paul's dad, they're not like different species, right?
No, but Baron Harkonnen is Paul's grandfather. Remember?
Right.
But I'm trying to remember on which side. On his mother's side?
Yeah, the mother. The mother's side. The mother is a Harkonnen, cuz the dad is a Leto. They're an actual like a royal family in that world.
So then I wonder who her mother is.
Hmm.
Is her mother Reverend Mother?
Wait, yeah, she is, isn't she?
Is she her actual mother?
Maybe. I might be wrong. I got the feeling that she was. I got the feeling that she was, but I might be wrong on that. And speaking of the Harkonnens, one of the most striking, like, visually antagonists I've seen in quite some time. The pale skin, everyone is bald, and like they all look like weird and like harsh. They look like aliens, you know, more or less that's what they are. I really like the character design and the costume design for them.
Like it's simple, but it also set themselves apart from just being a human with makeup.
It's a very memorable look.
Yeah, it's very memorable. It's very striking, especially when the like, I guess under their sun or whatever. Like, the colors change completely.
Yeah, and it goes all black and white.
Yeah, it goes all black and white. So that definitely adds a little menace to their overall appearance.
It made that gladiator scene look really cool.
It did. Yeah, and when their mouth is black, this motherfucker's yelling and screaming and his mouth is black and his skin is white. It reminds me of, you know what it reminds me of, actually? What? It reminds me of Prometheus.
And the alien movies? Movie?
Yeah, oh, like yeah. Those aliens, yeah. Like those white aliens. That's what they kind of remind me of, except not fake looking. Because those are obviously CGI or...
You're talking about Prometheus, right?
Yeah, like the big white aliens that were on that planet.
I don't think that was practical. If it is, you know, I don't know.
I'm saying it just... I feel like there's some inspiration there is what I'm saying. It looks very similar.
And it's, you know, this cast is so stacked. Do you feel like... Who played the Emperor again?
One of the... Stellan Skarsgård.
No, the Emperor.
Oh, Christopher Walken.
Yes, Walken. You feel like Christopher Walken was kind of... Like Christopher Walken, who's a... oh, my God. Black Widow's sister.
Florence Pugh.
You know, I mean, like, they were in the movie, but they didn't really... They weren't in there much. Do you
think they didn't have much of a presence in the movie.
Do you think they were wasted a little bit?
I feel like Walken was definitely wasted. I don't know if he'll even... If he would come back for whatever that third movie looks like.
Mm. I mean, again, maybe they get bigger roles in later movies, but that's assuming there's going to be later movies, you know?
Yeah, because how old is Christopher Walken? I feel like this is...
You always do this with older actors. Like, bro, why are you trying to put death on these people? You always say, like, they 1 foot in the grave. Come on, dog. He can't be that old. Come on,
born in 1943, so as of last year, he is 80.
Okay, that's pretty old. But still, I mean, he doesn't have to do much. It's not action. Well, I mean, it's an action movie, yes. But he doesn't have to do anything. Correct. Outside of talk.
I just feel like this is the most reserved role I've seen Christopher Walken in, even though he was supposed to be a diabolical emperor. Yeah. But I feel like this is the most reserved role I've seen him in. Like, there weren't really many Christopher Walken-isms, so to speak.
Although, I mean, given the kind of movie it is, I mean, I don't think it would have fit if they made him... You know, do all the Christopher Walken, you know.
No.
Stuff.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, obviously, yeah, that's not necessary for this movie, but it definitely felt like one of his more reserved roles.
Speaking on that for a second, so because we talked about the look of the Harkonnens, how did you feel about them as actual movie villains?
Because
that's totally different.
As actual movie villains, I felt like I didn't really understand their cause.
Okay.
I felt like I know that they simply just want to dominate other planets and include them into their army and all that and their collection of planets, but...
Well, the way I understood it, the Bene Gesserit told the Emperor, hey, them Letos, They gonna fuck you over one of these days, so you know you should probably do something about that. And Emperor's like, oh shit, okay. So this is what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna give them all the power over spice, which is this very valuable resource in the Dune world. You know, basically how this is what they use to travel ships, and it also has
hallucinogenic properties.
You know, so you know, hey, you know, 420. So basically, you know, he gives them the power over spice, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the Harkonnen are like, well, what the fuck, bro? You giving all these niggas this power? What about us? We want some power. So, you know, now the part where I'm like, did the Emperor know that the Harkonnen were going to react that way? And he used them to destroy House Leto? Or were they in on the plan?
House Leto?
They had to have been in on the plan. Because in part one, what's the fat one's name?
Baron Harkonnen.
Baron Harkonnen was like... When is a trap? No. When is a reward not a reward, right?
Mm.
And he never answered that question, but it alluded that he knows. You know, he was in on what was happening. Okay, so he probably knew. So the people who needed to know knew the plan. Okay, got it. I just talked myself into it. So yeah, you know, and then the Harkonnen was like, you know, no, fuck that. So they, you know, get rid of House Leto, and then Harkonnen takes over. So yeah, that's basically
who the
what it
fuck
was.
Is House Leto? You mean House Atreides?
Oh, Leto Atreides. That's his name. Okay, my bad. I forgot his first name is Leto. My bad. I've been saying House Leto this whole time. I'm talking about Paul's dad.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. I was like,
Paul's
what
dad's name is Leto. His name is Leto Atreides.
Jude Leto. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I forgot that's his first name, not his last name. But yeah. So yeah, House Atreides. So everything I just said, replace Leto with Atreides. So yeah. So that was basically the motivation.
Yes. I think he did know. I think that was the plan all along, was to...
Yeah, he had to know. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, to pit them once again up against each other, because the whole goal, the whole problem was that the House Atreides was beginning to get too big for their britches, and they weren't really falling in line with what the... what's the Bene Gesserit, mm-hmm. what they wanted. So Bene Gesserit and the Reverend Mother, she speaks to, like you said, to the Emperor. The Emperor says, yeah.
By the way, I can't believe I remember all these details. I'm surprising myself.
You're really recollecting my memory as you're talking. You're really bringing it all in memory recall back. And they were getting too big for their britches. And so, yeah, the whole point is to minimize those who think they may be too big to eventually one day overtake you.
Yeah.
And... That's
but you still thought their motivation was a little weak?
I did. I thought their motivation was weak, and I thought that the Emperor... I feel like everybody seems to be weak compared to the grand plan of the Reverend Mother of the Bene Gesserit. Mm. Like, I really still don't know what her plan is yet. We really don't know what their overall plan is. I mean, like she said, they have... plans for everything, contingencies. They literally are having, I guess, the beautiful part of their sisterhood get pregnant with random hierarchy, members of higher families in certain societies.
Mm-hmm.
So
for what purpose?
For what purpose? We
I got
don't...
the sense this is vaguely power.
I mean,
mostly.
Power is always.
Yeah.
What somebody wants. But why, Reverend Mother? Why are you using the religion, and why are you using all these tactics?
You know, that's what it is. That's the thing, though. Sorry, I'm going to look up the author's name real quick, because I had it in my mind, but I just forgot it. Frank Herbert, like, that was his whole point of writing these Dune books. Like, that's kind of the message he was trying to get across, how you shouldn't necessarily listen to, like, false prophets or someone who promises to do everything for you. You shouldn't, you know, maybe you shouldn't listen to religion too much and let it influence your decisions too much. Like, that's kind of the point he was getting across when he wrote these stories.
I can see that, and that definitely makes you think. I mean, yeah, I can see that for sure.
I mean, you know, using religion to influence politics, that's not exactly a fantasy.
No, it's the reality we live in.
Yeah.
Did you think what did you think when Gurney returned back to Paul, so to speak?
I liked Gurney. I kind of liked Aquaman a little bit more, but Gurney was cool. I thought, I hate to call this man Thanos. What's his name again?
Josh Brolin.
Thank you. Josh Brolin did a really good job in this movie. Again, he was one of the few characters, even in part one, that actually had somewhat of a personality. Gurney was cool. I was like, oh, hey, Gurney. But what I really want to know is what happened to the human computer nigga?
See, yeah, Denis Villeneuve said they had to cut his parts out.
Well, damn, what the? Because he's just gone. Like, after part one, he's just like, that's it.
They killed the only other black man in the movie in the first movie.
Did they? Oh yeah, yeah.
And then the second movie, the other only black man is cut out.
That's wild.
Racism.
He's just gone.
He's like that.
We don't even know what happened.
He did say that it was one of the harder parts to remove because he really loved what was brought to that performance.
And that's wild. And I like that actor, too. You know, he'd be showing up in places. I think he's in Civil War.
He is in Civil War.
Yeah, he's in Civil War. You know, he'd be showing up places. I like him when he shows up. He's like, oh, yeah, hey, that guy, you know? How I felt about the Harkonnens as villains, I thought, Austin Butler stood out, of course.
Yep.
But Batista did a good job, but it's not one of his most fleshed out roles. He's mostly just angry the whole time.
Yeah, he was definitely left to the wayside in part two.
Oh yeah, yeah, even worse in part two. They let him do because he's angry, but he gets his ass beat all the time. It's like, All right, bro. And Baron Harkonnen was good as a menacing force, but at the same time, I don't know, maybe if they could have showed him, I don't know, killing somebody or fighting somebody, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe something to give him a little extra oomph. Because honestly, it was mostly Austin Butler that really stood out.
Oh, yeah. Austin Butler for sure had like the standout performance. I think across the board, audiences agree that, well, some people are saying that it's been the best performance comparable to Heath Ledger's Joker. What do you think?
I don't know if I would do all that, but I understand why people would say that. I don't know, because Heath Ledger's Joker was on another level. You know what I mean? But I would say close. I don't know. But not too close. But he did do a fantastic job. I wouldn't give him Heath Ledger's Joker, though.
Yeah, I don't think it was. I think he did, like you said, he did a good job, but I wouldn't put it on par with Ledger's Joker, but I definitely would put it over Leto's Joker.
I see what you did there. Shout out Jakashi 6ix9ine.
I know you were going to say that.
But yeah, overall, I do think it's a really good movie that's a little bit too long, and it definitely pays off the setup of part one. As a matter of fact, part one, I would almost say it's unfair to an extent. Well, they put it out as a separate movie. It is what it is. Review of part one on itself. Part one plus part two together, I think, make a very interesting story. I thought the giant worms were amazing. The effects, I mean,
yeah,
bruh, it's got to be CG, but them joints look damn near practical.
They damn sure look real, you know, as fuck.
I want to see the behind the scenes footage on that. But yeah, some flaws. It's like I said, it's a little too long in the tooth, you know. But you know, the score is amazing.
This felt like the Snyder cut of this movie.
Yeah, yeah. Like that joint that stuck in my head ever since I heard it. Overall, I would probably have to give the movie a very solid 3.9 out of 5.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. I would say, yeah, I'd go, I was going to say 3.5 out of 5 for me. That's not to say there's anything negative about this movie, but one, like I do said, this movie is long in the tooth. Two, for me, a lot of the performances felt a little stale. A lot of the dialogue felt a little stale. The movie is beautifully directed, beautifully shot. The music is amazing. And those are a lot of the saving graces. It just was long, and it just was a long journey to figure out. We still don't know what Paul's going to do next.
If this was a TV show, honestly, it might get a 4 or 5 from me.
Yeah, I feel like this probably lends itself, because there are so many books, I feel like it lends itself to being a series.
Yeah.
Like, hell, Denny could have directed some episodes. He could have executive produced. Well, he's executive producing the Bene Gesserit series. But
more time to flesh characters out, certain plot lines out.
Yeah, I feel like there was too much. I feel like there's probably a lot left on the cutting room floor. I mean, although this movie is amazing, I feel like there's probably a lot more left on the editing.
Yeah. I mean, what do we really know about the Bene Gesserit outside of the fact that they want power? Nothing.
Nothing.
For real. You know what I mean? So stuff like that. You could flesh them out.
And if there is a deeper performance from Christopher Walken, I definitely would have loved to have seen that. But again, we were already at 2:45, so yeah. We don't need to press our luck with that.
Yeah.
So yeah, Adu gives it 3.9, JT 3.5. Let us know if you've seen the movie, what you think. Comment below on wherever platform you're listening to us on, whether it's Apple Podcasts, whether it's Spotify, YouTube, whatever podcasting platform, we're there. We appreciate your subscription. We also want to give a small shout out to the Humanities Department at Prince George's Community College, who is letting us use their equipment to produce this episode.
Yeah, so follow us anywhere on all social media, TikTok, IG, Twitter, Twitch. We're Streams from Birds. We're on YouTube, as you said. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. I think that's pretty much it. So we are out. Peace.
Peace.